Coming up on the show today, the latest from Gaza.
Humanitarian aid continued to trickle into the Gaza Strip as 20 more aid trucks entered. But a lack of fuel for deliveries is threatening to halt the operation.
Plus, U.S. troops in Syria under attack again.
On Saturday, the Pentagon announced it's bolstering its forces in the Middle East, sending a second carrier strike group to the region, along with a THAAD anti-ballistic missile defense system and multiple Patriot missile defense systems.
And later, still no Speaker of the House for the U.S. Congress, and Turkey looks to negotiate an end to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Today is Tuesday, October 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. An American base in the Middle East is attacked. We'll have that story in a moment. We begin with a related story. Concerns of a wider war in the Middle East are growing as the United States is dispatching more military assets and warning of significant threats to Americans and U.S. facilities in the region. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
Israel's military has increased its airstrikes on Gaza, destroying entire neighborhoods, amid expectations of an Israeli ground offensive. Amid fears of a wider war erupting, White House National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby said attacks on U.S. interests in the region have increased.
We know Iran continues to support Hamas and Hezbollah. And we know that Iran is closely monitoring these events and in some cases actively facilitating these attacks and spurring on others who may want to exploit the conflict for their own good or for that of Iran. We know Iran's goal is to maintain some level of deniability here, but we're not going to allow them to do that. We also are not going to allow any threat to our interest in the region to go unchallenged.
On Sunday, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke to ABC this week, saying the United States is boosting its military presence in the Middle East.
Jonathan, as you know, recently we've seen rocket and UAV attacks against bases housing our troops in Iraq and Syria. We're concerned about potential escalation. What we're seeing is the prospect of a significant escalation of attacks on our troops and our people throughout the region. And because of that, we're going to do what's necessary to make sure that our troops are in the right, good position. They're protected.
Since the October 7th attack on southern Israel by the Palestinian militant group Hamas, killing more than 1,400 Israelis, Israel's strikes on Gaza have killed at least 5,000 Palestinians. The United Nations and humanitarian groups are calling for a humanitarian pause in the fighting. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller had this to say on Monday.
Any ceasefire would give Hamas the ability to rest, to refit, and to get ready to continue launching terrorist attacks against Israel.
European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said Monday he believed the group's leaders would back a call for a humanitarian pause to allow aid to enter Gaza. Humanitarian aid continued to trickle into the Gaza Strip as 20 more aid trucks entered. But a lack of fuel for deliveries is threatening to halt the operation, with more than 2 million besieged Palestinians awaiting help. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
An Israeli military helicopter landed in Tel Aviv in the early hours of Tuesday, carrying two elderly Israeli women who were freed by Hamas on Monday evening. The Israeli Prime Minister's office issued a statement confirming that the women, 79-year-old Nurit Cooper and 85-year-old Yohevet Lifshitz, were handed over to the Israeli military. The two were kidnapped from kibbutz Nir Oz, near the Gaza border, along with their husbands, who are still being held captive in Gaza. Hamas freed them after releasing an American woman and her daughter on Friday. The United States is pressuring Israel to delay an expected ground invasion into Gaza to allow more time for hostages to be released. Israel believes that delaying any military action would only serve to help Hamas by giving it time to recover and reorganize. U.S. troops in Syria fended off another drone attack targeting American bases and facilities in the Middle East. Defense officials say they are holding Iran responsible. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more from the Pentagon.
The latest incident targeted the Antaf garrison in southern Syria.
Two one-way attack drones taking down, no injuries to U.S. forces.
Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Patrick Ryder says all signs point to Tehran.
We know that these groups are groups that are backed by Iran.
The U.S. says it has not seen intelligence to suggest Iran issued any direct orders, but that it will hold Tehran responsible.
We're going to continue to do what we need to do to protect and safeguard our forces.
This is the second time in as many weeks that Antamp has been targeted. A drone attack last week caused minor injuries. On Saturday, the Pentagon announced it's bolstering its forces in the Middle East, sending a second carrier strike group to the region, along with a THAAD anti-ballistic missile defense system and multiple Patriot missile defense systems. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Tuesday will mark the 21st day the United States has been without a Speaker of the House of Representatives, and Republicans find themselves no closer to electing one. Until a Speaker is elected, Congress is effectively shut down with no way to approve aid for Israel or Ukraine, and no way to keep the U.S. government funded past next month's deadline. The United States on Monday renewed a warning that it would defend the Philippines in case of an armed attack, as stated under a 1951 treaty. This after Chinese ships blocked and collided with two Filipino vessels off a contested shoal in the South China Sea. And security in Haiti, where violent gangs control large swaths of the country, has collapsed even further. With the number of major crimes hitting record highs, the UN representative to the impoverished Caribbean nation warned on Monday. A report on Haiti from the UN Secretary General published on Monday cited an increase in the number of indiscriminate killings, kidnappings, rapes, and other attacks. The October 7th attack by Hamas on Israel was devastating, unexpected, and also multifaceted. One of the now famous targets of Hamas that day was a music festival in southern Israel, where hundreds were killed and many taken hostage. And many, in fact, the majority, survived. But what is survival like after such a traumatic event? How does one cope? Some who were at the festival that day have made their way to Ronit Farm, located in central Israel, where a wide range of therapy sessions have been coordinated to help them. Linda Gradstein visited the farm on Monday and shared her experience with my colleague, VOA's Steve Miller.
So it was actually pretty emotional. You know, there were thousands of young people in their early 20s at this party. And from everything that they told us, you know, the sun had just come up. They had been dancing all night and just having a good time. And it was kind of this hippie atmosphere. And then all of a sudden, Hamas just like came into the party and started shooting, and there was complete chaos. And so this is kind of, it's a farm. It's usually a place that's used for weddings. It's a beautiful place with an artificial lake and big grass and whatever. And there's all kinds. It was set up very quickly by volunteers. There's all kinds of therapists there. There's yoga, there's sound healing, there's massage. And some of these young people that I spoke to said that for the past 2 weeks, they haven't been able to talk about what happened. Some of them were afraid to leave the house. They're all having trauma. And the idea being that if you deal with trauma sooner rather than later, you can stop post-trauma from happening. And I saw, you know, a bunch of people sitting around and playing a guitar, and a bunch of people, and a lot of therapy sessions one-on-one. And there was just this sense, some of the people told me that they felt that only somebody else who had been there could really understand what they had gone through. And one young man told me, 22 years old, tall, handsome, that, you know, he'd kept it all inside him. And then he came yesterday to this place and today, and just from being there for 2 days, he already feels much better.
Linda, how many people are we talking about? And are they staying there? Is this around the clock treatment?
So they don't sleep there. It's It's you know, they come, it's open every day. And they say that there are sometimes, between hundreds of people every day. There were at least 2,000 survivors of this music festival. They're not clear on numbers. 260 people were killed. And I spoke, for example, to this young couple who were just friends, and they went together. And she's a pretty young woman, said to me, "I'm alive because of him." I mean, it's very emotional. Right now, it's mostly therapy and a place for them to hang out. And it's all volunteers. The therapists are all volunteers. There's food there, all volunteers. Eventually, I assume that they will get some support. Although, you know, a lot of them have actually gone back to their jobs, back to their lives. But some of them, you know, it just, everybody's in a different situation. And they say that just by being together, so that they have this place until the end of the month. And they're looking to kind of spread this model not only to survivors of the music festival, but to Israeli soldiers and anybody else who might have been, who's traumatized from this war, which, you know, is more or less the whole country.
VOA's Steve Miller speaking with Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Still to come on today's show, Australia flexes its diplomatic muscle with the U.S. to counter China's growing influence in the South Pacific, and Muslim and Jewish communities in the U.S. are bracing for an increase in tension and hate crimes amid the Israel-Hamas war. But now to Ukraine, where Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says that Turkey plans to join a peace process this week aimed at bringing an end to Russia's invasion. The announcement came as a missile strike on a Ukrainian post office killed a handful of people and injured several more. It also follows a week in which Russia's top diplomat traveled to North Korea. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Nighttime in Kharkiv, Ukraine. The Reuters news agency says a missile strike Saturday wrecked a post office, killing 6 and injuring 17. On social media, the governor presiding over Ukraine's second largest city blamed Russian weapons for the blast. The operator of the facility said an air raid siren sounded moments before the attack, leaving those inside with nowhere to run and no time to seek shelter. By daybreak, drone video captured the damage as released by the national police. The attack followed a recorded message from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in which he said he had spoken with his Turkish counterpart, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, saying the two leaders discussed an upcoming peace summit next week in Malta to bring an end to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But days ago, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited an ally in the war, the Supreme Leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. Kim supports Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and the U.S. has accused him of supplying Russia with weapons. U.S. President Joe Biden welcomed European leaders to the White House on Friday, where he and his Western counterparts pledged support for Israel in its war with Hamas and assured Ukraine the bloc's support in its war would not waver. Meanwhile, Ukraine's armed forces continue their push to recapture land. For civilians in Ukraine who've already endured a winter of war, preparations are underway to keep warm and cook food should fighting again disrupt energy supplies as it did last year while the temperature dropped. All this comes in a week in which Ukrainian officials say they recovered some 14 artifacts allegedly stolen by a Russian man stopped at a U.S. airport for illegally importing them. Ukrainian officials say the destruction and pillaging of historical sites since Russia's invasion began amount to hundreds of millions of dollars of losses. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
On Monday, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese travels to the United States for a 4-day visit. He's hoping to make progress on the AUKUS nuclear submarine deal. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has the story.
Australia's formal security ties with the United States date to the early 1950s. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese told reporters in Canberra Monday that the alliance between Australia and the United States is central to Australia's foreign policy. His official visit to the US will include Albanese's 9th meeting with President Joe Biden in the past 16 months. The Australian Prime Minister said he will hold talks with members of the US Congress about the legislation that's needed to ensure the progress of the AUKUS alliance. Australian media have reported that some US lawmakers have significant concerns about the pact. AUKUS is a trilateral accord announced in September 2021 with the United States and Britain that would give Australia access for the first time to nuclear-powered submarines. It's estimated the agreement could cost Australia up to $244 billion and is widely seen as a counter to China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific region. Kevin Rudd is Australia's ambassador to the United States and a former prime minister. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Monday that the AUKUS partnership would be a key part of Albanese's visit to Washington, along with talks on clean energy.
Ensuring that all the relevant AUKUS legislation finds its way successfully through the US Congress, to broadening the economic relationship in information technology, defence technology, as well as clean energy technology. And beyond that, again, to enhance our clean energy compact and new work together on critical minerals.
China has previously criticised the AUKUS Accords, accusing the United States, Britain and Australia of going down a dangerous road for their own selfish political gains, in complete disregard of the concerns of the international community. Sunday, Albanese confirmed he would visit Beijing in early November to meet President Xi Jinping. A dispute over Australian wine exports at the World Trade Organization has been suspended as both countries try to defuse long-running trade and diplomatic tensions. China has agreed to review controversial tariffs on imports of Australian wine. In return, the government in Canberra is suspending its action in the WTO. The tariffs were imposed in 2020 as bilateral relations rapidly deteriorated over various geopolitical disputes. Restrictions on other Australian commodities, including barley, have already been lifted. Albanese has taken a less confrontational approach to China than the previous Conservative government he defeated in an election last year. In Washington this week, Albanese will attend a state dinner and an Oval Office meeting with President Biden. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
And finally today, Muslim and Jewish communities in the U.S. are on alert, fearing a rise in harassment and hostilities related to the Israel-Hamas war. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias has the perspectives of those affected and others who are calling to defuse the situations.
Since the start of the Israel-Hamas war, Muslim and Jewish communities in the U.S. have been on high alert, fearing being the target of hostilities. One of the most recent victims of an alleged hate crime was a 6-year-old Muslim boy who was found stabbed to death in Illinois on Saturday. President Joe Biden strongly condemned the killing of the child and instructed his government to prioritize the prevention and disruption of any emerging threats. Fadwa Hassan was born in the U.S. and has Palestinian relatives in the West Bank. She's concerned not only about them, but also about increasing tensions at home.
Any woman who wears a hijab or even when you come to our institution to pray, we have to worry now about, we've always had to worry about violence.
Linda Shapiro says that fear and anxiety are rising among members of her Jewish community and that her synagogue in Northern Virginia has tightened security measures.
We shouldn't be engaging in blame or hateful speech. We have to keep reminding ourselves and everyone else that this is all on Hamas.
The latest FBI statistics show that anti-Jewish hate crimes in the U.S. have surged in recent years, increasing by 36% last year alone. Anti-Muslim incidents have remained largely steady, fewer than 200 a year. But analysts warn that numbers usually go up when foreign conflicts erupt. Brian Levin is a criminologist.
One of the things that we know from past events is that when we have American casualties related to some kind of foreign conflict, or if we have conflicts between Israelis and Palestinians. Both anti-Muslim hate crimes go up significantly and anti-Jewish hate crimes go up significantly.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, told VOA that since the start of the war, it has been overwhelmed with concerns from individuals who've been targeted. But beyond condemning the violence, the root causes of the Middle East conflict should be addressed by the concerned parties, said CAIR's research and advocacy director, Corey Saylor.
For decades, we have been talking about dialogue. We have been advancing the idea that negotiations will get us to a peaceful settlement.
Meanwhile, the Anti-Defamation League, a U.S.-based Jewish anti-hate organization, pointed out that the Jewish community in the U.S. isn't a monolith and that ongoing acts of harassment against it aren't warranted. Rachel Sass is ADL's anti-Semitic incident specialist.
These conflicts that are happening abroad are sometimes very raw and emotional for communities here. But we have to understand that the actions of a government, a war that is happening overseas, should not be put onto an entire religious or an entire ethnic community.
When hate crimes or violent incidents do happen, authorities encourage victims to promptly report them to their local police stations or non-governmental organizations. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The October resumption of fighting in the eastern provinces of the Democratic Republic of the Congo shattered a fragile six-month-long calm. 6 months of relative tranquility that, according to the United Nations, has not improved at all, on the contrary, on the security or humanitarian levels. Indeed, the risk of a direct confrontation between the DRC and Rwanda, who continue to accuse each other of supporting armed groups, is very real. The resumption of fighting is a continuation of last October's second uprising of the M23 group, consisting mainly of Tutsis from neighboring Rwanda and other armed groups. They are mostly interested in illegally extracting Congo's mineral resources, although M23 also claims to be defending Tutsis living in the DRC. The security situation in the Great Lakes region remains dire and continues to deteriorate as tensions between the DRC and Rwanda grow, said U.S. Representative to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
Once again, I repeat our call for Rwanda to immediately end its support for the UN-sanctioned M23 and withdraw from DRC territory. We also call for the FARDC to cut ties with the UN-sanctioned FDLR.
As well, we call on regional troops deployed to eastern DRC, whether bilaterally or through the East African Community, to coordinate with each other and United Nations Organization's stabilization mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, and they must avoid human rights violations and abuses and illicit activities, including illicit mineral extraction.
Because of the region's instability, the humanitarian situation has deteriorated to alarming levels. Conflict has displaced more than 500,000 people in 2023 alone, many of whom are being forced to live without access to adequate food, water, or medical care in camps filled far beyond capacity.
Ongoing political instability has devastated food production and distribution, resulting in widespread food shortages, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
1.5 million people are facing emergency levels of food insecurity, and this is simply unacceptable in the 21st century. A man-made political crisis has become a man-made humanitarian crisis, and it must end.
I call on regional leaders to maintain an open dialogue, especially as the DRC's national elections approach, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. These elections must be free and fair for everyone, including women and minority communities. All Congolese civilians deserve the right to live in peace and to have their voice heard at the polls.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.